And
all of a sudden you'll we will jump to item four,
the third quarter report, because the people that are available for number two and three are unavailable. So our third, there's no action items on the agenda tonight, but it'll get interesting as the rest of the year. So, Karen, if you'd want to walk us through the strategic plan, objectives, key results.
Yep. If you turn to page three in your packet, you'll see the quarterly report that we've been using for this year's strategic plan. And on the left, you can see each of the metrics that we were measuring against for quarter three, and then a report out of how that's progressed. So one of our major goals for the year is expanding the collection and access, and also measuring our progress on the fines free effort. And those metrics have been fairly consistently reported across all quarters. Some of the metrics, like that first one around offering virtual programs, that's more of an outcome-based reporting. So we try to mix this report with both types of data, qualitative and quantitative. The ebook collection, you can see, is being very well used. It is definitely being used in even higher levels than a year ago. And you can see that in both the users and in the circulation report. In terms of fines free, we weren't really sure what to expect from the change, but you can see we have seen a pretty substantial increase in new borrowers year over year. That last quarter 322 cumulative column shows you we had 5,256 new borrowers this year, and in comparison, last year we were at 4,401. So that metric is definitely showing some growth. What isn't growing quite as quickly as we had hoped but has stabilized is the number of total borrowers. And if you remember our conversations from 2019, one of our challenges pre-COVID was borrower retention. So I think we are to that point where we were pre-COVID and trying to figure out what happens after somebody comes to the library the first time to get them to come to the second time and the third time and 3 years from now. Circulation by open hour has been pretty even, and keep in mind this is the second half of the summer. The first half of the year is generally the stronger half of the year in terms of circulation. And miscellaneous receipts, as Amy mentioned at the last meeting, is actually tracking higher than we had anticipated. Last year, before we went fines free, we were bringing in an average of $13,520 a month. And you can see we're still bringing in over $10,000 most months. So the change in usage there is not really what we expected. It's actually better than expected if you think about it in terms of revenue. On the next page, you can see some of the report out of one of our strategic goals to reach a wider audience. Breanne's put some metrics there in terms of how our library awareness campaigns have been going, and reporting to the board on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. We just did that last month with the WCOSA partnership presentation, and we'll continue that practice as we go forward. Cultural philanthropy is a big part of that and ties into our three-year fund development plan. So you can see we did manage to move to a new platform, which was slightly lower cost this year, and we're ready to go for year-end campaign. We're still working on adding new fund development committee members, so if you know somebody who might be interested, we would like to add more people to that committee, and have sent a lot of invitations but haven't had any acceptances yet other than a new staff member this year. And then we will be presenting on the year-end campaign a little bit tonight, but Lee and Jane, as our fund development committee members, will be doing the formal pitch to the board at the next meeting. We just launched it today, I think was the daily news post. Diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. The toolkit was launched in May. Zuria and I discussed that at the last meeting, so we are working on dealing with those recommendations that we shared at the last board meeting. And you can see our financial institutions are on track. So I do see that our presenter is here. Tammy, do you have to be out of here at a certain time?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm going to continue with this agenda item, and then I'll introduce Tammy Lee as the next agenda item. So she's number one, if that's okay.
Hey, let's roll.
All right. So the things that you'll want to note for action or item on the agenda number five later in the meeting. On page five, you'll see total borrowers by library. And this is what gets more interesting when you look at the borrower numbers on a library by library basis. What you can see here is what the total numbers of borrowers were in each library as of January 1st and what they were as of October 3rd. So how much that has changed in each library. And some have gone way up and some have gone way down. And that total number is a reflection of all borrowers registered to that location. And, you know, St. Cloud, you can see, has got the biggest loss. They're the biggest library. On the flip side, we've been talking a lot about St. Michael. They had the largest growth just numerically. They're at 390 additional borrowers since the beginning of the year. So if you go to the next page, you can see that new borrower report by library, which looks very different. Year over year, so the first column is the new borrowers to date through quarter three. The second column is what that difference is compared to last year. And the third column is what that difference was compared to 2 years ago. So you can see just about every library has had increases substantially since the pandemic started. And what's not happening is the total borrower numbers are not reflecting that increase in new borrowers. So we are looking again at a retention issue now. Does anyone have any questions about those stats? I think the ones to really watch here are Swanville, Elk River, St. Michael, and Buffalo, because those are the ones we'll be talking about more when we get to the library development plan. And Swanville has been pretty stable. St. Cloud's been declining, but is still the biggest of all. St. Michael is on a path unto itself and is now number two, generally, in total borrowers and circulation. Elk River used to hold that position and has declined. Buffalo was number three, is probably now number four in most categories. And then going to the next page, and to speed things along a little bit, we'll go to page number nine, which shows the year-to-date circulation in each library through the end of September. And you can see this is comparison for 2022 compared to 2021. So a year ago, we were generally mostly open again, and programs were back up and running for the most part. And you can see, even with a fairly strong summer, some of our locations are now seeing a decline in circulation physically compared to last year. But if you go to the bottom line, the digital library has had record years, year over year, since the pandemic, and we're still seeing growth in that location. So, again, St. Michael is a standout here, is on a path just as strong as the digital library right now. And then some of those smaller locations surprise us, like Cold Spring and Richmond. They're really small locations, but are seeing a lot of growth. And some of that has to do with the actual connection with schools and some of that coming back this year compared to last year. The other one we'll be talking more about later is Swanville. And the reason I call that out is circulation in Swanville is not what it used to be. We will likely not break 10,000 items in that location again. It's been a while since we've done that, and we all know that Swanville is very important, but it's something for us to continue to reflect on, especially as we're updating this library development plan for the next 3 years. Like, what does that mean for Great River? Is that a location that we want to make a big change in any way in the future? And if so, what does that look like? It could be fine just the way it is. And that's what we've always said. But that location circulation is substantially lower than even Belgrade, which is the second lowest library. So just, it's the precursor of what we'll talk more about in later in the meeting. Any questions about stats?
What's your take on Swanville? How does that...
Swanville's interesting. Circulation is lower. Lower than anywhere else. But borrower numbers are still hanging in there around 300-400. Okay. What we have said, though, when we set our branch agreements up, we said this many hours for this many borrowers and this many hours for this many borrowers. And the lowest we said was 400. Well, Sawmill is slightly below that now. And will they always be in that category? It's hard to say if we get some recovery. The other thing that's happening in Swanville, though, is they've eliminated the school library in that really small school. And so this is the only library in town. Wow. So what does that mean for Great River? And I think it's just important for us as management to draw your attention to that since we're updating this long-range plan for the next, well, the three-year plan on our buildings, because that's the library people are going to point to when they start talking about low circulation or high circulation. Like, it's the bottom of the pack. So it could be any library, but it is Swanville, and it has been pretty consistently.
And how, where is the closest library to Swanville?
Upsala is about 15 minutes away, and Gray Eagle is probably another 15 minutes the other direction. The other big library it's actually paired with is Little Falls, which is, I think, 17 miles, but more like 27 minutes because it's curvy roads around lakes. So,
and Gray Eagle doesn't have much better, but I mean, it actually is losing the number of years. I mean, Swanville actually is gaining.
Yeah, and you know, the hard thing with monthly circulation stats is some Saturdays, some months have five Saturdays, some months have four Saturdays, but that year-to-date number, I mean, we're talking about pandemic recovery, and so when you look at year-to-date 21 to year-to-date 22, we would hope we were still seeing some growth there. But what this doesn't show you is what 2020 looked like, and in some of those locations, they were the first ones to do curbside in the state, which meant they had fairly strong circulation in 2020 compared to everyone else, and so a year-over-year decline isn't actually reflective. The thing to know about, like, Great Eagle and Eagle Bend, are these are communities that no longer have schools and did when we opened the library there. Mm-hmm. So a lot's changed over time at Great River in these locations.
Okay, any other questions? Well, the county boards get this data. I don't know if it has merit or not to note that to those boards. I don't know. We'll just wait and see if they bring something up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all goes back to funding when you get right down to it. Is
okay.
You want to tie funding to usage, that's the library we'll probably be looking at first.
All right. Yep. Well,
So Tammy Lee and Mary Jordan are both here now. So our number one, our number two and number three presenters are both in the house.
All right. And Tammy, are you ready to go?
Sure.
Yeah, you can have a seat. Or we have table mics up here.
Yeah, do cartwheels, whatever you want to do.
I wish I could do cartwheels.
So Tammy Lee has been our state librarian for almost a year. And joins us from the Ramsey County Library originally.
Originally the Ramsey County Library,
and,
yeah.
She's trying to make the rounds, so I asked her to come to this meeting because it seemed like with a work session that would be a good opportunity to meet her.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having me out today. I really appreciate it. I really love working with Karen. And, so I thought I would just start with, hi, my name is Tammy Lee. I'm with State Library Services. And you might say or ask, what is State Library Services? So State Library Services is a library development and service agency. We're responsible for the RLTA and RLBS oversight and management and dispersal among the 12 regional systems. And we're also responsible for the federal funding that we receive through the Institute of Museum and Library Services in the form of, like, LSTA grants. And those are smaller grants that help libraries around the state. We are very small. We don't have a physical state library, I think maybe since 1991. And so we really do focus on the dispersal of funds, some training and programming through the state, and we're trying to actually, in a way, find our way and how we're supposed to be shaped. So we'll be working even more closely with the regional systems, CRIPSLA, which I always forget what that
Council of nobody here
Council
other than
of Regional
knows
Public
Library System Administrators. It's when the 12 directors get together.
Yes. Yes. So CRIPSLA, the Minnesota Library Association, Minitex, which is in a way provides a lot of the services that we used to provide when we actually were a brick and mortar state library. And other library, either libraries or library support agencies around the state. So that's what State Library Services is. And we do have a lot of services. One thing that we've always done and I want to expand on is library board training, really with the intent of empowering boards, not to prescribe what you should be doing and that sort of thing. We understand that, you know, you have a regional library board so you can make your decisions for your area. But just to empower you and make sure that you understand that you have rights and responsibilities, help with statutory guidance, things like that. And we're going to be developing new and improved training for library boards in the first quarter of next year. other services such as, you know, like I had said, training and statutory guidance, MDE, which is the Minnesota Department of Education. State Library Services is under the umbrella of MDE, most particularly under the Office of Teaching and Learning, but we also have access to people like a general counsel at MDE. So we can hopefully provide better guidance as we go forward when you have issues in the library. any questions so far?
The State Library Service, like, how big is the office? I mean, how many people
are right now it's 3. we are down. I'm in the process of I'm going through the hiring process for the first time on the job. Well, not my first time ever, but first time at MDE. And so moving a little bit slowly, but we are hiring a state program administrator, and they're the person that provides oversight and disperses the regional library telecom aid and the regional library basic systems of support. So we'll be onboarding somebody new for that, and then also for the Library Services Technology Act or the federal funds, an LSTA coordinator. So we're hoping to have them in place. It keeps getting pushed back, but by the end of November at the very latest.
So you're authorized 5 individuals in that office?
Well, yes, but I actually have money for more. It's just that in the past, the previous state librarian hadn't wanted to expand, but I have some ideas for expansion, and there are possibilities for funds to increase. We'd like to, we'd like to talk to CRIPSLA and anybody who wants to weigh in about what is needed around the state. I think, especially when we're talking about the complicated E-rate applications, things like that, we're looking at somebody who's even more focused on helping the libraries around the state do those technical things. When we're looking at things like digital inclusion and other issues that are coming up, we're kind of thinking maybe a librarian's tech specialist that would be in service to the libraries in the state of Minnesota. So those, we're talking about those. And I do think that there will be funding within the next year to be able to expand.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We don't see her very often, so take your shot.
Well, and I got more, so you might have. I'll try. I didn't want to overwhelm you. So a couple of things that have been going on in this last year, other than me, being like, oh, in a new position is we did accomplish our five-year plan. So the Institute of Museum and Library Services requires a five-year plan for state library services in every state. And we did, I think, put together a very nice five-year strategic plan for libraries in Minnesota. We got our authorization that it was accepted and fully certified by the Institute of Museum and Library Services about 10 days ago. And a link to it will be going out in our newsletter, which comes out this week. And we should hopefully, it was sent into communications at MD a while ago. So hopefully it'll be put up on our library website. We'll also be talking about it at the Minnesota Library Association. And that is the general plan for how we're going to use funds and the general direction for libraries in Minnesota. So that's something that you might want to peruse. We're also entering into legislative season, and so State Library Services has put forward some policy and one big budget item. The policy is a lot of language changes or statutory language. The new statutory language is around the definition of a school library. And then there's some kind of just changing basic things that in existing statute. And capital improvement projects were when the budget session comes up, we'll ask for that. They don't think it'll be successful this year, but keeping our fingers crossed. And then the biggest one that Karen actually was really helpful on, and I'm so thankful for you, is the changing the formula for how we determine regional library basic systems of support. And so I feel like we have a really great base, a strong case for doing that. So I'm very hopeful. Keep your fingers crossed. If Karen says, hey, help, you know, that's really important to libraries. It's an increase in funding for Hold Harmless and a restructuring of how we determine the formula for the 12 regional systems. The other thing that I wanted to mention that we're doing is Capital Projects Fund. So the governor's office has $50 million, was told recently that they had about $50 million available to them, from the federal government that basically wasn't used somewhere else in the United States. And so then the federal government reshuffled this money around. They were told that they would have the opportunity to apply for capital project funds in Minnesota. And so I did put forth a capital investment for libraries proposal that would align with digital inclusion for seniors in rural areas and multi-use facilities. I did specifically ask that it doesn't follow the structure of our existing capital investment program, which can be daunting. I asked for it to be much simpler, and we'll find out. Again, keep fingers crossed, because it could really help to there's almost $90 million in capital improvements that are needed in libraries in Minnesota. So it might be a really great way to, you know, fix those steps and, you know, expand that bathroom, you know, change that air handling system in libraries. So because we are, by definition, for the most part, multi-use spaces. So we already fit the basic category that they're looking at. So, and plus, we're libraries. So we're hoping that that goes through. The other thing that we are kind of working on a little bit sooner than later, because of things that have been happening around the state. I don't know if you've been hearing about all of the challenges that have been happening around the state. And so we are working actually with MDE to provide some sort of training around Again, we're not going to determine or prescribe your collection development policy, but we want to be able to provide resources, national resources, just, and we encourage, we're campaign to encourage public and school libraries to just make sure you've got one in place. It protects you, it protects libraries, it protects your community. And again, we're not going to tell you what's in it. We just want you to make sure that you've thought about it so that towards the end of November, we're going to start doing something along the line of best practices, and we'll start offering that around to libraries around the state. So I don't think I had anything that I was planning on talking about. But again, I appreciate you inviting me to this meeting. Thank you very much. And there is an open door, open virtual call at State Library Services. If you need anything, you know, we want to hear from you, and we'll do our best to address any needs that you have. We're there to support and empower and to provide resources. We really want all of our library boards to be strong and healthy and feel confident to make the best decisions for their communities. So if you need more data or support or whatever to do that, that's what we want to be doing for you. So really appreciate you letting me come out. It was a nice drive.
Well, and you're welcome to stay.
I just have one more question. So if I wanted to look at the strategic plan you talked about, if I did a search for Minnesota State Library Services, would that get me to your strategic plan, you think?
Yeah, I didn't have time to check in the yesterday or today if it's on our website yet, but it was submitted to communications to put up to our website.
Maybe in a week or so, yeah.
Yeah, you
I
should
can
be
send
able
it out.
Oh, yeah.
I can send it to you.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Quick question, and this may not be pertaining to you, but I don't know. So when you talk about the state libraries, does that also include public school libraries? Do you have any oversight of that?
We do, actually, as far as if a school district has a licensed media specialist or school librarian, they are eligible for LSTA funding, like through grants. They can apply for grants. We also are in support of ITEM, which is, again, acronyms. It's the Integrated Technology
Educators of Minnesota.
Seriously, acronyms will be the death of me. we are in service to public school libraries as well in that way.
And is there a general trend that public schools are eliminating libraries? Because that's what it seems like, unfortunately.
Yes, and that is actually, that's in opposition to really solid data that says mm-hmm. that when you have a school librarian, test scores are better, students are happier, fewer dropouts, all of that kind of stuff. There's tons of data, and in fact, I think that they've been collecting that data, you know, at least for 10 years now. So I think one thing that we're also doing that I mentioned earlier is the definition of a school library in state statute, and we are putting that forward this year. And, you know, we could really use as much support as possible as far as making sure that goes through. We've had opposition in the past and from unlikely places or things that I didn't, avenues that I didn't expect. And so, yeah, in a way, selling this. I think often, I think the people that were pushing back really felt that it would be a financial burden when in actuality it doesn't need to be. And isn't, it, you know, on the face of it, it doesn't mean that we have to have a licensed school media specialist or librarian in every school. It means that we need to have at least one in the district, and we need to have as many as possible because they're very valuable. They are often, at a rate of like 91% have more education than the school principal. So as far as like, you know, teaching degrees, undergrad, master's in library science, they were the ones that did all of the training internally for staff and students and then externally for parents. When we switched to electronic, education for COVID. I mean, they are really valuable. And then also there's a little a matter of often public librarians, public children's librarians are doing the work of school librarians. You know, if there isn't, you know, say there's like teacher volunteers that are running a school library, which is wonderful. I love that. But then often public librarians are going in to do, library user instruction education with students or, you know, things like that. So getting everybody on the same page and making sure that everybody is valued for the skills that they bring to the table. And so ITEM is one organization that we're working with. There's so much data, but it keeps kind of going out into the air. And so that's one way that we're kind of approaching this problem and making sure that we get MDE on board. You would think that MDE, Minnesota Department of Education, would be like, but they're a little bit more like, oh, yeah, libraries. Okay, yeah, you do your thing. And that's been a little bit of a learning curve this last year for me. And but they definitely are taking notice of libraries. So that's a good thing. So
just a quick point. So, you know, I live in Sawtelle, and the school with an $80 million high school without a library, and I was really upset with that and fought really hard for a library. The response was libraries are dead spaces now, and it is better to have small collections of books scattered throughout the school at different places where kids can just take them and read them and stuff like that. I'm interested in what effort is happening through your efforts to try and negate that narrative and bring it back that digital libraries is not the solution for what a library provides.
Again, the statutory language around definition of a school library does define that, a library is a space in a school. A school library is a space in a school library. We talk about access in that definition. I'd be happy to send you the language that we have so far, and if you're interested, if anybody's interested, they can. I am getting together with school librarians and media specialists before we actually start pushing this through, just to get some ideas, because, you know, I'm only me, or, you know, we have a small staff.
I would love to work with you on that. I'm very passionate about libraries in school.
Excellent. I will. Well, Karen, will you connect us?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. So I'll send you that, and that is our big push. But yes, there's lots of other work to do at MLA, the Minnesota Library Association that's coming up, gathering that's coming up next week. I'm meeting with different school librarians and media specialists to talk about how we can resolve some of these issues too.
Thank you.
I just want to clarify what I think you said. You said the Minnesota Department of Education is pushing back on libraries. Is that true?
They don't push back on libraries. They just are like, oh, yeah, they're a department, instead of the unique, wonderful. Libraries have existed in some ways longer than, like, the practice of education, like formalized education. So I do think that once we lost our brick-and-mortar building, I think maybe, and we're kind of chunked together with MDE, I think MDE was like, oh, okay, libraries. One way that I see issues around that is MDE. This makes me sound bad because I do love them, but MDE is very much students, students, students. And I'm like, wait, we serve people birth to, sorry to put it this way, death. You know, we're not just all about K-12 students. And so getting MDE to acknowledge that we serve seniors and single people and, you know, whole families and people that are 0 to 5, you know, that sort of thing.
But even if they don't understand that, having a library in a school is fundamental to learning. Is it not?
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell them. That's what I'm saying.
That they're dead spaces and digital stuff is all you need now. You don't need a library in a school.
And schools, so really, school libraries, well, okay, the difference between public and school libraries are tasked with, measuring literacy, and, like, public youth services is not. And so that is one way. And I have said before that school libraries and school librarians are like the Trojan horse to the heart of MDE, to the MDE commissioner, because it's a way to like get in and be talking about libraries. When I first came, I was given the MDE strategic plan, and there was not one mention of libraries. Huh. And then I wrote an email, literally like this. And so then at the next at the next leadership team meeting, the commissioner was like, and we were able to fit libraries in 2 times. So even though we align in so many ways, I think I'm moving the needle, and State Library Services is moving the needle. And they don't hate us. They're not in opposition to us. They just really, it's like a big brother that is like, oh, my little, what? I don't know what he's doing sort of thing. And so kind of, and I'm that person to be like, hey, you know. So we are moving the needle, and yeah, that's part of our. You'll see it in our strategic plan. It's definitely in our stated in our strategic plan. And I was surprised. So if you're surprised, I was very surprised when I actually was on the job and was like, "What? This is the dynamic? I didn't." Think that would happen.
Well, thank you for what you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're doing something that's desperately needed.
Mm-hmm. Trying. Yeah.
Anything else anybody have? Is there any what's the plan going forward, if any, to expand electronic resources in the effort here?
So that is Minitex is the is in a way the physical arm of State Library Services, and I do know, actually Karen probably knows a little bit more about some of the electronic resources that are coming along from Minitex. I think that there is an expansion of Elm, isn't there?
Jamie would know better than me.
And then something about open electronic resources. They're cooking up some stuff.
There's some good things happening. We're growing eBooks Minnesota all of the time, and that is the statewide eBook collection that's available to anyone. You don't have to have a library card. And you don't have to wait in line either. Whatever you find on the website will just open, and you don't have to wait. That's great. We also have Elm, the Electronic Library of Minnesota, and there's lots of great digital resources such as Learning Express Library, all kinds of databases, and you'll find those on our website as well. I know that I'm on the task force for the expanded content on eBooks Minnesota, and we're always talking and strategizing how we can deliver more e-content to patrons, because that's what they're really looking for. So more to come on that.
Okay. All right. Anybody else got anything? You want to do a wrap then? What else would... you want us to know?
Again, open door. Please don't hesitate to contact State Library Services if you need anything. We appreciate the work that you do for your communities and for libraries, and thank you for coming here tonight. Thank you. So, yeah, that's all I would say. Do you have anything else?
No. Thank you for coming. It's
all right.
Been really good.
I'm going to go get a cup of coffee.
Yeah, you're welcome to stay. We'll be here for a while, I think. So.
Yeah. Esar's job, man. So, I don't have anything else there.
No.
How about...
we have Mary Jordan here from Central Minnesota Libraries Exchange. I think she also needs to hop over to the St. Cloud Library Board meeting, which she's done here possibly too. So, just in the interest of time.
I am supposed
already.
To finish starting at 6:30.
Hopefully, they've got their quorum.
Hopefully so.
So I think you guys have met Mary Jordan before, most of you. She is the director at Central Minnesota's Libraries Exchange, and she gives our report to us annually.
So. I do. So hello, everyone. And hello, JC, who I actually forgot you were going to be here tonight. And you come up later in my presentations. So CMLE, for people who aren't familiar with what we do, we're a multi-type library system in Minnesota. We're one of the seven, and we are obviously central Minnesota, so we're the 12 counties here. We have about 300 member libraries, and we help to, I wrote down our mission statement so I wouldn't forget, visioning, advocacy, and education, that we partner with our members to make these things happen. And these are libraries of all types. I mean, obviously, we have wonderful public libraries, but we also help to work with the school libraries. We work with all our academic libraries, and we work with special libraries. So special libraries includes everybody that has a library that isn't one of those. So Stearns History Center has a library, and they have a librarian on staff. They're one of our members, and their librarian actually is our treasurer for our board. The CentraCare Hospital in St. Cloud has a library. The prison has a library. They're one of our members. So little kind of unexpected places like that that have libraries and but maybe don't have another home to easily go to, they're part of us. They're part of our community. Anybody with a library is part of CMLE. So kind of our focus is sharing information, providing some training, providing a little advocacy work. We do that in a variety of ways. So we're a very teeny little organization. We're currently actually just one person. more on that. Actually, good news there. But one of the ways that we like to share information is podcasting. It's such a flexible medium. And so I know I've been on here. Several of you have podcasted with us. So thank you, Zuria. It was outstanding to wrap up our season last year. I was hitting JC up, of course, already today. Karen has been on several of them. Several feels like the right number. So anyway, we have one that's called Linking Our Libraries, and that is library skills training. So it's really aimed at just an audience of library staff. And as discussed, Tammy, of course, Karen beautifully laid out, we have a lot of, I mean, and over 200 of our members are school libraries. They're often staffed by people who don't have library degrees, don't have library training. Last year, they worked in the gym. Next year, they're going to work in the art room. But this year, they're in the library. That's hard. That's hard for them. It's hard for them to provide that kind of quality school experience that we were just talking about. So one of the tools that we have to try and help out is to provide this training through a podcast. People can listen to it anytime. They don't need to be in person. Can be on their own schedule. We keep them short. We keep them, you know, useful, focused skills that either through our user studies, our members have said that they need or that they need refreshers with, or skills that are relevant in the literature across the country. So that's Linking Our Libraries. Tune in. It's fantastic, obviously. Our other podcast is called Reading with Libraries. This one's a little bit more popular. You may not be surprised to learn because it's our book group podcast. So we call it a book group. We try to make it sound fun. On the weeks that we produce that, we talk about different kinds of books. It's not just to be fun, though. The idea is to be a reading, a reader's advisory training program. So every week that we do this, we have a different theme, we have a different genre. Sometimes we let the guests come on and choose the genre that they want because people think of things that I never would have. Right now we're using suggestions from Pop Sugar. If you are into reading challenges at all, this is a very popular reading challenge. It suggests books to people. So we are using their prompts, and that way people can listen to them, not just our members. Anybody can, but we try to tailor things to our members. They can listen to those, get some book ideas, get some suggestions. We not only give them specific books that we share, but we also give them, you know, links to maybe you need to learn a little bit more about this genre. Actually, the first year we started doing this, 5 years ago, 5 years ago, we started right about this time, and we, of course, for Halloween, we were looking at some horror books, and we discovered that, like, our members had no idea how to recommend horror books, or once you get past Stephen King, where do you go for scary things? So, I mean, that's not the end of the world. Not everybody knows every genre. You don't have to. We provide a resource that's all in one place that you can either listen to or you can read the show notes and get whatever information you need. So, nice, easy training. We also have a weekly newsletter, so it comes out every Friday. If you're not already signed up for it, please send me an email. I would love to sign you up. My email is mary@cmle.org. Karen also has it. She can pass it on. But every Friday, we pass on library news, maybe around the state. We often reproduce most of the newsletter that the State Library Services send out with information for our members on how to subscribe to that themselves to make sure they're getting it, that they know what's happening around the state. But we also look at some library stories that may be going on around the country or things that are very specific to us. Excuse me. So this week, one of the stories that we have is about our ARPA money and our funding for our mini-grants. We have 10,000 final dollars that we are distributing to our members in mini-grants, and so we want to make sure that those get out, get spent, and immediately our members, they know what to do. They jumped right on this. We had several applications come in right away, so I was proud of them. They did so good. So anyway, very local, statewide, national news about libraries. That's what we're trying to distribute, and we try to keep it in check so it's not 1,000 stories. It's information that would actually be useful. Let's see. We also do training videos. So we've put together a variety of training videos, and we give a certificate for PD credit, for professional development, or CE credit. At the end of each class, you can get that. So actually, during the quarantine, for example, we had a lot of people in the state of New York who were watching our videos and requesting certificates for that. I think in the public libraries in New York, they have to have certifications. And so that was very cool and unexpected. But again, as we do everything, we aim it at our members. But if it's online, it's for anybody. We're working on developing some more PD classes specifically aimed at our schools, aimed at some of the teacher requirements to make sure we don't work with teachers. We don't work with, like, English teachers or math teachers. We just work with the people in the schools. But if we provide it to people in the media centers in the schools, it might be able to be useful by other people, too. So we're hoping that that'll be helpful. So VR kits. We have virtual reality kits, and we're so proud of them. I'm so excited. We got these, 3 years ago. I think you may have been on the board when we got these, an LSTA grant. And way to go, Lee. I'm giving you total credit there. And
totally undeserved, I assure you.
So we got a really nice LSTA grant from State Library Services. Tammy wasn't there yet, but, I mean, obviously, hats off to Tammy as the representative thereof. So we have virtual reality kits because VR is not just like a fun thing that the kids do today. A lot of organizations are increasingly requiring their staff to take training in VR. So, I mean, obviously many branches of the military are using VR, but Walmart is using VR training for their middle managers. Retail employers are using VR to help their employees learn how to get robbed safely. I know, that seems weird. But if you practice being robbed a few times, you know how to react, and it goes better, and fewer people get hurt. It's always good. Doctors are using VR to help reduce the use of opioids because they can help people to have a visual experience that helps them to reduce pain and to feel more calm, less anxious. So we want to make sure that our schools in specific, but any of our member libraries, have an opportunity for their students and their communities to use some VR. So we have got a really cool kit. And this morning at 8 o'clock, JC and I were working together on our VR kits. And we dropped off 4 at her school. And we were able to kind of get that going. Her staff was fantastic. She had everything lined up for us. And I think it went really smoothly. I was excited.
It was fun.
I am naturally kind of excited person, but that was definitely good. So we do have a staff member who has moved on to SCSU as you guys know, full-time employment is a lovely thing to have, and she didn't have that with us, so she's gone on. But our personnel committee is starting to work on the job description. We've actually already had people call us and say, hey, so when you hire, could you hire me? Are you going to talk to me? I feel like that's a good sign. And we'll see. We'll see once everything gets going if they're still interested, but I was really pleased. I try to do research across the profession because libraries always need better research. So actually next week I'm also going to MLA and giving a presentation on how libraries can reach out, and specifically school libraries and academic libraries, how they can reach out to people whose first language is not English, whose English might be their second, third, fourth language. What could we be doing to make sure we're serving that community? So these are the results of a national survey that I've been doing in partnership with a couple of other people. So we're not actually done with all the analysis yet, but I will be done by next week. And I hope it'll be something that's useful. Okay, sorry. I was really fast, and I don't know how far over my time I went, but...
Yeah, we're running a little long today.
Sorry. So
does anyone need to be done right at 7 tonight? Okay, good, because the meat and potatoes is yet to come.
You've got good stuff ahead of you.
All right, so... Does anyone have any questions for Mary?
I just have.
Oh, go ahead.
I know nothing about the organization. Okay,
That's okay. So
I think you said it's just you, but you keep on saying we did this, we did that. So at how do you do all this stuff?
At this very moment, it's just me because my staff member just left like 3 weeks ago. She and I in conjunction have done a lot of this, but we also have a very active board, and I do actually lean on a lot of our members. to ask a lot of questions to help us make sure that we're providing the material that we need. I try to make sure that we're always talking to them. And so our members are on the committee that hands out the grants. Our members are part of the focus groups that help us to write our strategic plan. I mean, I don't think projects are ever just one person. So I'm the executive director, but it's not me.
Tends to be library professionals that what they bring to the board is part of what they do, you know. So relative to the organization visually lacking depth, they do surprisingly better than you might anticipate.
And you're funded with membership dues? Is that how?
No. So we're funded by state money through the state library services. So we are an amazing state value. I figured out once when we were doing a report that people in Minnesota pay about 3 cents a person for our services. I feel like we dramatically, our ROI is dramatically higher than that. So we don't serve the public, though. We're not a library.
Yeah.
We serve the libraries, and then they take what we give them and they serve the public. That makes sense. And it can be a little complicated, but
thank you.
You talked about the grant dollars. Are there set the amounts of grants, or do they vary on the number that you give and the dollars per? How does that work?
Sure. Our board sets a limit on that. So during the early days of COVID, during the quarantines, as you know, our schools were really hard hit. So our board actually set up emergency extended grants that we went to $1,000 for each. They essentially were just the schools that got the grants. This is state money coming from the state. It's not through us. It is for us to distribute out to our members. So right now our board voted to give this up to $500 per library. They can apply for that much money. The focus is obviously on, you know, programs, schools that it's mainly schools that apply for this, who we think are going to be able to actually spend the money. And one of the questions that we ask and that the committee gives a lot of weight to is that the percentage of students receiving free and reduced lunches in the school district. And because our board is interested in making sure that the money goes to schools that really need help. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Anything else? Not? We got beef coming.
And I'm sorry, I missed it.
No,
He said the beef is coming because I said the meat and potatoes.
I will leave you to your beef.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And if anyone's interested in hearing more about podcasting or video making and training, please don't ever hesitate to get in touch with me. I'm very happy to talk about libraries extensively. I'm sorry, I got to go to my next library board meeting.
She's on the St. Cloud Library Board, so there you are. All right. Well, thanks for making time for us tonight, Mary.
All right. Karen, you want to...
All right, so I'm going to try to speed this up a little bit, even though this is a pretty substantial document, because I'm assuming people have read this in full. Mm-hmm. the highlights I want to bring out before I ask our staff who've come to present on our... I mentioned Swanville earlier. There's a description of what I kind of alluded to earlier on page 18. Please take a look at that. We will be putting this document in the November board packet for approval. So if you want me to write something different, if you want to provide feedback tonight on what you'd like to see differently, this is the opportunity to provide that feedback. On page 24 and 17, there's a typo. We have Big Lake listed as having 33 hours. They actually have 32. So I just wanted to make a note of that. Elk River, as you know, we've been talking about the open hours agreement there. Great River has decided not to incorporate those hours. Our logic for that is described on page 18. Also, at the end of the packet on page 67, you can see a letter from the City of Elk River requesting what that schedule would be if we reduce the hours at the beginning of the year. Our staff have also done a survey of the patrons this week, and that's reflected what's in the city's request, so I think we'll be moving forward with that. St. Michael, on page 5, we've asked that that be the location we add hours next based on their usage. The piece I really want to dig into before we go tonight in particular is around Waite Park and Cold Spring. If you look on the executive summary, on page 5, let's see. It's actually on page 14 in your packet. You can see there are four facilities identified here as those in need of improvement and three that already are working on that right now. And we've been talking about some of these locations over the past year. What's different about Cold Spring and Waite Park is they have appeared in just about every version of this plan for a really long time. And so we need direction from the board at this point on where you want to go, because places like Kimball and Howard Lake, when they showed up on this list, have moved forward with building projects. And I'll let our staff tell the story, but we're in a very different place with Waite Park and Cold Spring than we have been with places like Howard Lake and Kimball at this point, because there's been a lack of forward motion, and it looks a little different on the two locations. So I don't know, Brandy, Jamie, and Kira, do you want to maybe just come up here and I'll take a seat back and maybe go sit by Randy, as long as that's okay. And while we're switching gears here too, I want to introduce Jeanette Burkhart. Jeanette, you want to raise your hand or stand? Jeanette is our new patron services supervisor. She is Ryan's replacement, so she'll be supervising our southern branches, and this is her first board meeting.
Good evening. Hi, I'm Jeanette Burkhart. As Karen said, I'm Ryan McCormick's replacement. I'm the new patron services coordinator for the southern branches. I've been with Great River for 15 years. I served both as library assistant and most recently the library services coordinator for Becker and Big Lake.
Welcome. Yes.
So I don't know how you guys want to approach the topic, but I know you guys have been talking about it today, so hopefully I'll break it down.
Kara, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Oh, I would love it if anyone else would go first.
How about I'll lead in a little bit.
Okay.
So I'm Jamie. I work with the collection. We did a little digging this morning, Karen and I, in my office, and we unearthed this document from 2007. Waite Park and Cold Spring were both listed as
undersized for their communities at that point in time. So this has been an issue for 15 years. It influences my department in that the physical collection needs a lot more maintenance than in other locations. So a lot of our collection management processes are built around bag limits. Staff can send 6 bags of weeding in per week, 2 bags of relocates. Waite Park and Cold Spring are so undersized that they can't deal with all the volume of returns that patrons are using. And so we're having to find creative and new ways to deal with some of that. So, for example, in Cold Spring, we don't send any new materials there. They get no new materials. They get only their holds, and they don't get relocates from other libraries. So that influences the browsing collection that's available to that community. In Waite Park, they're sending out a dozen bags per week of overflow material directly to St. Cloud. The time to manage the collection is enormous in comparison to what it is in other locations, simply because the facility is undersized. And so, Kara, would you like to talk a little bit more specifically about the Cold Spring location?
So before this meeting, I tried to get a handle on exactly how many plans preceded, my inheriting this branch. And I don't know that I was able to nail down exactly how many different iterations, there has been a plan in place before. When I took over this branch, they were on a path to moving both the police and the fire department out into their own location, and then the city administration and the library in Cold Spring were going to inhabit the sort of redesigned building. And that has kind of fallen apart. And so now we're left not really with a clear path forward to getting a new library there. Right now, the city of Cold Spring is, in discussions to move forward with a fire hall, and they're doing some environmental studies of a proposed location, but discussions haven't moved forward with a library specific. As far as some of the issues, a lot of the stuff hasn't changed since 07. Some of the important things to note about how that impacts the use of the space. This building was designed and hasn't been updated since before computers were used in the library, just to kind of give you an idea. It hasn't been updated since it was built in 1984. One of the things I've been doing as I've been taking on the branches that I'm working with is that I've been working a day at every single location. And one of the interesting things I found about Cold Spring is that in those spaces, there are lots of workarounds, right, to make sure people can get to certain areas. While sitting at a public computer, if somebody in a wheelchair or some sort of assisted mobility device wants to get to the holds, the person at the computers has to stand up and move out of the way to make space. In my mind, that's a pretty big problem if we can't offer the same access to everybody. We've spent a lot of time. I was part of the building committee. I've been, attending those meetings, attending city hall meetings. It just, has kind of spun in their wheels. And I don't want this to, reflect poorly on the staff there, because they're doing an amazing job with what they have and the space that they have and the limitations. But it's also hard to see what impact those limitations have on the community. anything?
What was their city budget as it looks this year?
I'm honestly not sure what their overall budget is. That's a good question.
They're bonding for a new fire hall. Mm-hmm. But does that give any space for Cold Spring to do something different or bring it an option for you?
You know, one of the things that I have heard over and over again from, the last designer kind of did a breakdown of how much space. Yeah, there's a timeline, but they also broke down the amount of space each city entity needed. I have a timeline here, but I don't know that I have. Oh, I do have some of those, totals for square foot that is needed to correctly program for like police, fire, and city admin and library. What it sounds like is there just is not enough space in that city admin building. You know, it's one of those little puzzles where you're sifting the little pieces around it, and something's got to get out of the way. Does that answer your question?
Kind of.
Okay. You've said you've been to the city council meetings, right?
Mm-hmm.
For how long?
How long have the meetings gone?
No, or? I mean for how many years?
Oh,
have you
for
got
how
to
many
be-
years? I've only had this particular branch. I'm finishing up my second year in this position. When I came in, I believe it fell apart. Kind of, they were on a path forward with a combined fire hall and police station, and that kind of fell apart. I'm thinking it was probably in January. I don't have the exact date.
It's okay. So my basic question is, does the city council recognize these problems that you just cited? Saying we haven't got the money to do anything here right now. We're focusing on police and fire.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please do. Randy's had Cold Spring.
Yeah, anybody who can answer it.
It's because it's difficult.
Yeah, so my name is Brandy Cantor, lead patron services supervisor for Great River. And as my previous assignment, I had Cold Spring for 11 years prior to Kara taking it over. And it has, they have been notified multiple times of the issues that are concerns. There have been many different plans put forward at different points in time by friends of the libraries and other things. Mm-hmm. There have been many different staff for the city who have been very conscientious.
George.
And
they're upper management, Cold Spring. Yeah, it's kind of like a bread mixer, you know. There's been so many.
No. My point was, just like with Waite Park, I really want to be clear. I do not want to disparage any city staff. Mm-hmm. Like, in Waite Park,
I'm not disparaging staff. I'm disparaging council. You got management. I think they've had good people there, but they can't get the council on the same page. That's Cold Spring. Waite Park, they're trying hard. They're bonding. Well, they're trying to get in this election here in a couple weeks. The council is pitching the population hard to get approval for additional bonding, but that's going primarily to police and fire. But it's been cool. I would say that Waite Park is closer, the library is closer to their radar screen than it is in Cold Spring, but they're trying to be too damn polite. Well, I'm a politician, and I know dysfunction when I see it. So
if Cold Spring isn't interested, if they're not interested in moving forward with the library, what's our role as
that's
a board?
That's kind of
precisely.
Getting to exactly. Yeah. If they're sending the secret signal, they don't want a library. Yeah. What is our role?
And it's not that though, right? I mean, they want a library there, but
if they're challenged financially with space, and you know, administratively they like to keep everything together, should the library move out of there? Is that there an option for some other commercial space to be leased and covered by the city elsewhere?
To clarify, are all four departments in one building?
Yeah. In a building that was built in 1984.
And to clarify, they have serious challenges. Like, the police department in Cold Spring does not have a private place to interview.
Yeah.
They use the council chambers.
They use the council chambers.
I think what's frustrating with Cold Spring, having worked with it for 11 years and then handed off to Kara and seen her frustration, is simply that it feels like, in Cold Spring particularly, as Lee pointed out, it's the same cycle over and over again. It's a churn that you have really committed friends, you have really committed city staff who come in and try to make a difference, and it all falls apart. And in the meantime, we have our staff who are frankly extraordinary. They're really extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And they're spending all of their mental, innovative energy trying to figure out how to keep from drowning in books, which means they have a lot less time and innovative energy to think about how to serve the community. And that's really the crux.
How do you grow the library when you're spending it on time like that?
Yep.
That's why I asked the question, does it make sense to leave and find other commercial space? I know Wade Park, your square footage cost would, it's challenging, but Cold Spring, is there?
Well, and our branch agreements are with the city, and the city's skin in the game, so to speak, is providing the space. And on the flip side, we've got communities like St. Joe building a community center just down the road saying, hey, we're ready for you. At some point, we haven't broke ground yet. We'll give you a call. And so, and we have places like Kimball and Howard Lake that stepped up and did something. So we're at this point now where we've signed new branch agreements. We've had these conversations with the city. What do we do with this iteration of the plan with places like Cold Spring in particular? And we haven't talked a lot about Wake Park. It is different, as Lee alluded to.
It's really unfortunate when you look at these years, because interest rates were so low in 2019. I mean, we, you know, the estimates that we got for the government center came in below estimates. Interest rates were around 2%. And so cost for that building was $52 million. Then it'd be over $80 million now. So it's just, I mean, if you don't get in that sweet spot, it really makes it tough to, you know, I mean, who knows when they'd be able to do it. I mean, if we hadn't done what we did in 19, it wouldn't happen in 20 or 21 or 22. So it's kind of too bad that they weren't able to.
And I think we haven't
through with that.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to this part yet, but I think one of the things we've talked about as management is maybe services can't look the same in these locations any further. Yes, we have a branch agreement, and it says we do all these things, but we've been asking for a new building for a while, and we haven't seen it come through. So maybe equity of service looks different in a location that's undersized.
Yeah, if you're working with a dysfunctional government entity, what choice do you have? And you're limited by what kind of space you have. You have to change the characteristics of it to survive a little bit. And again, I bring up the question, do they want a library or not?
So I use the Wade Park Library a lot because I live in Sartell. So coming to here, and Wade Park is halfway, I'm always around that area going to St. Cloud. And I hate to say it, but it's a joke. It's not a library, it's a joke, really, with the way it is set up. Doesn't have any services at all. The whole place for the books are carts that are stacked on this area, and you have to go through carts and sit on the floor and look for your books. If you were to think of it as a place to eat, it's like a rest stop you go to because you have to go. This is the place you are intended to go, but that's the only stop you make because you have to go, and that saves you the 15 or 20 minutes extra that it would take you to come to St. Cloud. But with that being said, that's a center of the town where a lot of people can utilize it. The St. Cloud Public Library is right at this corner, Wade Park, Sartell, Sauk Rapids. All of that area is very far away from here. So that makes it a very good spot to provide services. I agree with Karen. Maybe we don't have a variety of material. Maybe just keep it as a pickup spot and say, okay, anything that you put on hold, you can pick up at Wicket Park, but there's no other services, no computer services, mm-hmm. stuff like that. But it needs to be there, but what it is right now is a joke.
So that's a nice segue into maybe Brandy's update. She's the one that dug into Wicket Park a little bit, and we've heard a lot, but maybe there's more you can share.
Yeah, again, I do think Wicket Park is different than Cold Spring, and I do want to make that distinction. To my knowledge, with Wicket Park, we've only been asked to provide one space needs analysis. We've only been asked to do that work one time, and they said, "We, very honestly, we're a growing community. We can't do that right now. You're on our radar," which is a different kind of answer than we've received from Cold Spring. So I really want to be clear about that. And I've had great talks with Bill Schlenz, the director of Public Works, who has said, I want to put you on a 3 to 7 year plan, but I can't put you sooner than that. Like, he gets it. He knows we're undersized. He knows we're strapped. And he knows that he's got a community that, again, their current police station and city offices, they're bursting at the seams too. Yep. And so I really want to be very careful to not group them together. That said, it causes significant strain for staff. We've had 4 library services coordinators in a row, at least 2, if not 3, patron services supervisors, Jamie, like all trying to figure out how to manage Wicket Park because of the number of holds that go in there and because of how much gets returned. As Jamie mentioned, there's limits to how much people can return. Staff or spend or how much they can send back to St. Cloud, just because we have capacity limits here too. The staff spend so much time just returning to St. Cloud what was in the book drop that they don't have the time to manage the collection so that even the small collection we have there is truly relevant and current for the community that we're trying to serve. In terms of services there, we do have regular patrons who use the internet stations frequently. It would be very sad to see them gone. At the same time, there's no privacy, you know. So there's just big challenges there. And I think the other piece, like with that building in particular, the city put in a small lift, and I mentioned this on page 51 on the facility assessment. There's a lift there that works really well for staff for moving parts, but the public doesn't want to use it. So it's not, the lower level is not actually as accessible as it needs to be. Staff have tried to deal with that by putting large print up on the main level, but now that means that large print is in a place that can't grow because there's literally no other place to put a bookshelf. So it's different, but it is the same kind of challenge where it feels like trying to do the full service, the full menu, is just breaking staff.
We really prided ourselves on being able to offer the full array of services to bring a microcosm of the library into some smaller communities. But we're at a point where it's trying to fit, you know, a square peg in a round hole. You can make it work, but at some cost. And
you need a big hammer all the time.
Yeah, and that gets tiring for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, in the alternative service model on page 52 and 53, we explored in 2019 this concept of a popular materials library. 62. Oh, there's 2 sets of numbers. That's why.
It's the packet and then the page.
Got it.
Yeah.
So the idea with this is that we would have a collection of popular, like, newly published materials available. I went around and around. Victoria in Carver County is where this service model was launched. And when the director there evaluated it, she said, you know, it works okay, but what we're finding is that it's very difficult to change patron behavior. 40% of the circulation or better in both Waite Park and Cold Spring is driven by holds. People like Zuria who are coming in to pick up their holds because it's convenient. So it, even if you fill the library in a small space with all of the very, very best materials, it would be challenging to change that patron behavior of wanting to just come in, get their things, and leave because there's no space to browse. If you have to wedge yourself in to check out the new bestsellers right next to the person who's trying to, you know, fill out their taxes or apply for unemployment, that's not a very pleasant experience. So we're at a point where we'll either need to, as Karen mentioned, limit services and or provide a lesser collection. You know, it would just be a small segment, maybe in Waite Park. It's holds pickup and a children's area. But that bucks against how we have always delivered service. It's in the branch agreement that we have a floating shared collection. It's in policy. So we've kind of come to an impasse where all of the tools at our disposal have not worked well. And that's where we're hoping to get a little direction from all of you.
From a historical standpoint, the number of patrons at all four of those locations, they look to be fairly steady. There was some decrease last year, but from, you know, Brandy, you've been in that area. What's your gut instinct tell you about the number of people the last 5-10 years that go to those four libraries?
Sure. Especially around Cold Spring and Waite Park, we've seen significant drops. It's kind of a chicken and egg type of question. You know, are people not coming because it just doesn't feel like a place you want to go be and hang out? I think when you look at the libraries that are truly thriving right now, St. Michael, it's not just that they have a beautiful space that's big. It's also that there's great places to chill and hang out. I had the pleasure of being the PS suit for St. Michael for quite a while, and it was awesome to see people come and, like, families would come, and the kids are, like, doing a play date at the library, and the caregivers are hanging out and chatting, you know, and then you've got a teen area where a bunch of kids can hang out. I think in this day and age, if you have a library that does not have spaces where people can be and talk to each other and communicate and just not have to pay a cent to be able to hang out with other human beings, if you can't provide that, you're not providing a relevant library. And I think that is the crux of what makes it really challenging within Waite Park and Cold Spring, is you can't provide what the community needs in terms of the physical space they want in the library, because you're trying to provide the collection, that the best collection you can, but then you're still not able to provide the best collection that they need. And so it becomes this chicken and egg. I don't know how to unravel which came first, the drop or the space not meeting the needs, but there have been declines for sure. And I don't know how to fix that.
You need... What happened in, in Howard Lake, that's true, and especially in Kimball, was a couple of higher profile local community members stepped up and started really beating the drum for a new facility. In fact, the Kimball story is genuinely, well, now looking back at it, funny. What happened, they had a mayor in Kimball who promised a new library in one of her campaigns, but also promised there'd be no tax increase. And what emboldened her to make that comment was they had a bid for a library in front of them. Before they had a bid for the library in front of them, they had secured a grant from the state for just under $600,000. To her, that sounded like a lot of money. Well, it was half, less than half of what the new library was going to cost. And so here she was, stuck with this promise, and only half the money. What are we going to do? Well, she had a local friend who is known for really being effective raising money for places like St. John's and St. Ben's. And she stepped in and started, shook down the community and got private donations, and that's how they got the library. In Howard Lake, it wasn't, it was more widely accepted with folks, not that I know Howard Lake that well, but it was more widely accepted by the public that this was a need, and that's what happened. So they didn't have to do the private fundraising. But, you need a local chance. Well, everything you're telling you is on the mark, but you still need the local champion, or a couple of local champions, or maybe a small group of local champions. But that's where they're at.
I mean, I think in the case of Cold Spring, they had that back 11 years ago and raised a substantial amount of money, and the city's still sitting on it.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Yes.
I think that's one of the real challenges that we have with the library is we end up working with, like, Friends of the Library groups who try to be that local champion. And I would say one of the most difficult parts of my work with Cold Spring was seeing the Friends of the Library local champions just get crushed and demoralized about the process.
Yeah.
Because our branch agreements, as Karen said, are with the cities. We cannot go into agreements with the Friends groups.
You can't get a private.
No, we can't. And so our hands are tied. We need, yes, the local champion. And yes, Kimball was one for the record books. That is the little city that could and did and paved the way, and it was such an honor to work with them through that. But it worked because we had a mayor and a council there who said, now's the time to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What, in my opinion, what needs to happen is the patrons need to put pressure to the government. And for that to happen, we need to cut the services or change the services.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have to have patrons going to the city council in groups complaining.
I don't know whether that is the answer. I mean, for Sartell, I was at every city council meeting. I was at, Karen knows me. I mean, we did, the Friends of the Library of Sartell were, I think, one of the most active groups that I was, we were, had meetings at church every Sunday in the evening to talk about a strategy about getting a library for Sartell. We never got it because our mayor was convinced that what we need to do is provide internet connection to each and every person in Sartell and not have a library because a library is a dead thing. She said that right at the city council meeting. Libraries are dead. What we need to do is give away. Now, obviously, her thought was wrong, but because she and the council did not agree with the large majority of the Sartell population that wanted a library,
right,
even though we were advocating it the best that we could, nothing happened. Yeah. And the money was allocated.
Still believe residents coming to forums helps. I'm a township supervisor. When people come to our township and complain about an issue or have an issue, we take note of it and we listen. Rather than having you folks try to convince the city council of the validity of it, if you have residents that use the library coming, I think that makes a huge difference.
What you both are talking about is grassroots, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So now, if I may step in, there's elections coming up, I'm assuming, at Cold Spring. Is the mayor up for election? Is the mm-hmm. council? So there probably we couldn't do anything until after that election. But if it does, I mean, we did a study for them in 2016. Nothing happened, okay? So it's kind of like we are letting them kick the can down the road. We're not being aggressive enough to honor their branch agreement. But consequences, Karen, or what? What if we would cut services? Does our branch agreement allow us to do that? or do we have to give them another notice and another notice?
Haven't they had some unusual circumstances with changing in government seats as well?
Multiple times. Been,
yeah.
But that we can't.
And recently, yeah. There's like two or three.
The city administrator stepped down recently.
Oh, so yeah.
That was a big piece.
But again, they're going to be changing. Everybody changes some type. We got to take the bull by the horn and say, okay, now we're going to move forward. And if they get a different mayor, it's still there. So then, like George says, now you get community people. Well, this is what the Great River is going to do to us, unless now you might have some people step forward. But again, the question is.
That's what I was just going to say. With consequences, is there a possibility? You mentioned St. Joseph. Like, can we say something like, here's what we need. You need to have a plan in place by X. Otherwise, we're going to start talking to St. Joseph.
We
and
could
move a branch. That's a huge deal, I realize.
That's why we wanted this conversation, because we talk about this behind the scenes quite a bit. But we can't do that as management without the board being 100%
I'm saying, can the board do that?
The board, right. I think based on this conversation and timeline-wise and what we've done before, we'd put this plan in front of the board in November. In between this meeting and the next, like, the cities have been getting our agendas since we did the branch agreements in 2016, so they should know that this was on the agenda. I can do a follow-up email to the cities saying, this is going to be passed. If you have any questions about what's in here, please let me know before the November meeting. And then after the November meeting, we could start sending notices out to those locations that are identified as priorities. But I think, you know, Belgrade's already working on their water issues. Sauk Center kind of asked to be put in the plan so that they can get their windows fixed in a grant someday. Waite Park and Cold Springs notices are going to look different. And I think that's the part we have to work on, is what does different look like? I'm hearing reduced services is the step we should go. We haven't done that before. That's something we've talked about in the past, but we've never actually gone that far. And the hard thing with reduced services in one of our branches is it's an exception to the rule, and what Great River is really good at is doing everything the same way. So it means creating workarounds for people on all sides of that, whether it's a branch not relocating to Cold Spring as they are now, or, you know, selectors knowing not to send books. You know, it's going to change internal procedures pretty substantially. But it feels like that would be the right next step other than just cutting services. But I like what you say, you know, maybe this is a 3-year plan. Every 3 years we look at this. So maybe we set up 3 years as the deadline for something, whatever that next step would be.
How was the health of the Friends of the Library at these four branches? If you had to give them a letter grade.
Oh gosh, I don't have a friends group at each of the locations that I work with.
Cold Spring and Waite Park, I think he's asking.
Yeah.
I
was thinking if I'm going to give it a grade, I'd have to compare them to something else. I do know that there are, when the library is on the agenda, there are Friends of the Library who are there. Those other pieces that would have to move for the library to exist in that building, when those are on the city council's agenda, the Friends of the Library shows up, and they speak and they do say things that I, you know, probably couldn't stand up in the middle of a city council meeting and say. So, you know, they show up and they talk. I, as Brandy said, I think they've been a bit demoralized. Yeah.
So just to kind of back up on what Christine said, you know, with interest rates and there's all this talk about recession, realistically looking, if we are saying you need a new space and then we are asking a city to give the space to us, that's asking a lot with the current environment that we are in. But I like the idea what Karen said. Can we do a patch-up plan and say, okay, we can do some kind of a patchwork for the next, let's say, 2 years. And in that period of time, if you are not able to commit to giving us the funds for a future library date in your location, then you're looking at greatly reduced kind of services coming to your location because we just can't sustain it. So like we did, is there a possibility? The best thing I could do, I think that would happen at Wade Park is if we get kind of a locker system like Sartell. So there would be a lot of more hold space for books because they have them on carts. It's literally ridiculous. You have to go through carts like this to find your requested material. But if we had, let's say, 50 lockers there, if they, for the next 2 years, would they be willing to invest some money in adding a holding space so that at least people who use it for a holding space can use it and then look forward towards building, maybe thinking about building in a 5-year plan, an additional bigger library space or committing to that?
And there is, you know, something to be said for they're not kind of holding up their end of the agreement. I mean, you know, you have what services you're providing and the way you're providing these services, but because of their space, you can't provide the same services that you can in other libraries. So there is a little bit of that going on, too. I mean, I think it would be understandable, I would think, you know, if you say, hey, we just aren't able to continue to provide these the same level of services or the same number of services or that kind of thing. And what's their recourse? I mean, you've got 1,700 square feet in one library. That's pretty teeny.
So what direction are you looking for? Are you looking for us to give you some direction today, tonight?
If you're ready to go there, I'm open to it. I mean, we're pretty good at creating a path, too, based on the various feedback we get. But in the past, the board has been very active in helping hold cities accountable to some of this stuff. If you remember, we had...
We should get a hold of the commissioners. Who's the commissioner in that area?
What, Cold Spring?
Yeah.
It might be, well...
Well, it's changing. Jeff Mergen was.
That's right.
And
a lot of people run.
Yeah, well, no, just two now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Is it going to be Jeff? But
it's either Barry Belknap, who was on the Kimball Building Committee, or Jeff Bertram.
Oh, so.
Maybe the building Kimball Building Committee sounds good.
So what recommendation do you have for us to give you some direction?
Do we need more than what we've gotten tonight, do you think?
It's been pretty good about what we've gotten.
So what I've heard just discussed is we're going to give them an ultimatum. Okay. Give them time to react to that ultimatum.
Yep.
I don't know what that time is. Is it 6 months or a year, 2 years? I don't know what it is, but I think it's reasonable. And I hear you all, you library professionals, you want to provide the full menu of services, and it's so hard for you not to do it. But I think you have to look at this as a business enterprise. And if a business, you're running a satellite shop somewhere and it just isn't working out right because you don't have the space, you have to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As much as it's going to hurt you.
Well, it could, and also it will maybe come back and make everything positive because if we do give them that ultimatum, all of a sudden here, you know, the city council is going to say, well, look.
I agree. The worst scenario could happen is Cold Spring says, we don't need your library.
And I don't know about Wade Park. I would like a little bit more thought on the Wade Park one. But
well, Zuria's idea is interesting. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's added to really the ultimatum. Hey, Sartell's giving us a locker. Do you want one too? This is what the price tag would be.
Every time I'm there, there's not even a chair in between the area where the books are to pick up a book and sit and read for a few minutes to see if you like the book or not. You're standing and reading. There's no space to sit. The only thing that place is good for is to go pick up your books, get out.
They want you in and out.
They don't want you to sit down. There's no space.
So I have two questions with that then. Number one, it sounds like it's just a really crowded locker system. So maybe a locker system would be, you know, a good solution. But also, I think you mentioned, or somebody mentioned, that in 3 to 5 years, it's on the plan to do something in
like
3 to 5 years. So they're actually actively looking. Did I get that right? To change something, they're trying.
They've talked about it.
I have not seen that architects have been spoken to, or that there's a large overarching thing. But there is a commitment on the part of Bill Schlenz, the public works director, who has said to me, I hear you. I know we need to do this. But we need to do our police station first, and we need to do
So I think in this situation, too, an ultimatum is good. It's you're nudging them, okay?
Yeah.
And, well, and Zuria, said. Zuria's framework of, because nothing gets done in government overnight.
Right.
It needs to be a decent amount of time.
Absolutely.
And giving them notice. And I know not all four of these cities are the same, but that ultimatum, that framework should be communicated to them, as well as the reason why I asked about the Friends of the Library. There's your grassroots.
Yeah, how much money does Cold Spring have put away that they funded?
I have no idea.
It's
held
money?
By the city, so.
Is it still there? Because Sartell's funded?
I don't know.
But there is money there that they...
There was money
there
raised.
There was the
money
had raised money.
And the city was holding it. And beyond that, I don't have any answers for you for the specifics.
That should be public information.
I'm not saying it's not there. I'm just saying
right.
I don't know.
Right.
The Sartell money was from the
it is public,
from
but
the
what,
city
they make
that
it
was
public?
Promised. It was not from the Friends of the Library.
Oh.
The city had said this part of the sales tax will go towards forming a new Sartell library, which they later on said, oh, no, we are going to take that money and put it in something else. And everybody said, nope, you had raised taxes, saying specifically a library, but they used that money for something else.
Now, in Cold Spring, when I worked in Albany, they actually had, like, golf fundraisers. And it's my understanding those dollars got transferred to the city and were held by the city.
And they should have them.
And I don't know how much or where. I've heard rumors, but I'm not going to repeat them on the record.
The Maple Lake Library, which is not part of your library, but they had a wine pull. So basically they donated bottles, and they had a fundraiser to keep their little library going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you want to encourage drinking in the library. In the library.
Get a book and
a lot of fundraisers for keeping their services going. Yep.
So I think, as George said, we'll finalize this plan at the November meeting, and then we'll do some notices on behalf of the Great River Board to the cities that are identified. The ones for Waite Park and Cold Spring will have more teeth in them than they have in the past. We're going to move the direction of reduced services, and this is what they look like, and we'll sort out how that might work. Like the one we've talked about behind the scenes are things like legacy programming. There was a point in time when Waite Park didn't do programming when we didn't have legacy money. Maybe that's one of the things that comes off the list.
I think you'll get way more cooperation out of Waite Park than you will out of Cold Spring. Waite Park is they're hitching their wagon in a referendum in the next 2 weeks for a project that if they're successful for the police station and fire, there will be room for what you want at the current city hall. But let's see what happens there. And from the efforts I've seen them put into that referendum, even if it fails, I don't see them, the mayor and council, being giver-uppers on this. They'll take another run at it. So, and Bill Schlenz is a dynamite resource. I'm glad you got that connection there. So he's been with that operation for some time, and is pretty good at reading the tea leaves.
And I would also recommend not to leave out that part about if the people that work in those libraries know their patrons well enough to informally suggest to them, go to the city council.
Yeah.
If you want to have library services.
Write them a letter.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to sit through all
notice,
that.
Library services may be reduced. Mm-hmm. If you are not in agreement, please contact blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they know the patrons really well, that they come on a regular basis, they'll have an informal discussion and say, hey, here's what's coming down. We would appreciate it if you go to the city council for us.
You need to fill that city council. That's what they
need. Yes.
It worked in Howard Lake. It was standing room only that night.
Because once they have the threat that we call it, you know, we can't call it a threat, but we will call it a threat. But it's like then we might start looking what's going on. Because then, like Lee said, There may be some that are, that we're going to take the bull by the horn and say, you know what, we're not going to lose this library, so they might start putting pressure on that council.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you all very much.
Yeah. This is helpful.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the extra time.
Yeah.
The good fight.
Thanks for supporting it.
Yeah.
What do you want to do next?
The last thing on the list is the most important thing. Last but not least. The library's biggest fundraiser is our year-end campaign, and that starts tonight with you, the Board of Trustees. So Patty has your letters for the year-end campaign, and this supports the library system as a whole and provides the ability to enhance new collections and provide innovative library services. So we'll have more about the year-end campaign at the November meeting, but thank you for your generous support of the library and
Done, Lee? Are we going to adjourn?
Lee's got to adjourn us.
Are you going to adjourn the meeting, Lee?
Yeah, as much as I like hanging out with you folks.
All right. All right, thank you.